This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
On the Jeff Ireland controversy, Mike Ditka said, I'm just reading the quote here, Golic, you're going to love this.
Okay.
I think the individual who asked that question, somebody ought to whack him in the head. That's the quote from Ditka on the situation. Let's bring in Brian Billick with perhaps a more subdued but always insightful opinion on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Brian, the whole football world talking about Jeff Ireland asking Dez Bryant if his mother was a prostitute. You certainly went through years of drafting players, bringing in players, evaluating players, and I'm sure asking a lot of questions of players, some of which may have made you uncomfortable and may have made the players uncomfortable. When you saw this story, what did you think?
Well, you had to question the venue, even though that is a private setting, and it is, because it's the player, head coach, general manager, possibly a couple coaches, and not to give justification to it, it seems like a lame thing to do, but keep in mind, you have 15 minutes with these individuals, you have 60 interviews during the course of the week. They sit down and they immediately get into, particularly when it's an athlete that has had some issues, they get into a mantra that is programmed via their agent. And as a coach, sometimes, or a personnel director, you try to get them off their rant. You try to get them off script because you have basically 15 minutes to kind of look into the soul of this young man. Now, I don't know that this was the venue to ask that question, but clearly they were looking for some type of response, possibly, and again, I've been listening to you guys all morning and you've covered it thoroughly. Part of it may have been, you know what, I'm going to try to irritate this guy. He has got some issues, and I want to see how he burrs up against us because this is something that is going to hang with him in terms of things in the off field. And there's been a lot this young man has had to deal with. Now, that doesn't excuse maybe what sounds like a lame question, but trying to give some context as to why would someone ask a question like that, there's a lot of different reasons when you sit with these athletes and try to peer into their soul.
Okay, well, let's go with the side of it first that they were trying to find out about his mother. She has a past. She spent time in jail, and, you know, if there's going to be obviously the relationship with Dez and his mother, they want to know everything about everybody. So let's say it wasn't to provoke him, at least for this first part of the conversation. What would be the way you would have gone about trying to find out that information?
Well, first off, in something of that personal in nature, you do that in a much more private setting. And keep in mind, I don't know that you're asking that for some prurient interest. It's not at all. You want to know, I think you alluded to it earlier, Greeny, that there's a lot that comes with these players. You want to know, in an ability to service them once you get them, what is their personal life like and some of the pressures that they have under them. I'll give you an example in the opposite extreme. We drafted Haloti Ngata after both his parents had died. And for us to not be aware of the strains that now, he basically became the patriarch of his family. To not be aware of that, to not recognize the demands that were going to be placed on him by his family members. Now, that's an extreme the other way, but you have to know what is this young man coming into the league with and what is he going to have to deal with, if for no other reason, how are we going to help him with that, as opposed to, oh, well, if he gives us the wrong answer to this, we're not going to draft him. But by the same token, I don't know, even in that private setting, and it is a private setting, that you don't have that conversation in a much more one-on-one conversational tone to make sure he understands why you're asking the question.
And then let's go to the other side of it. If you are asking to maybe provoke a response, to my answer to that, Coach, was, I think it's apples to oranges. If I respond angrily because an executive said that to me, that doesn't mean I'm going to respond that way if some drunk fan yells it to me, you know, where I know in that situation you may get some bad talk from a fan out there. So I guess my question would be, if Dez Bryant got up and popped him, does that mean, you know, well, this kid obviously has issues and I'm not going to take him because of that? Or would you look at it and say, well, he's defending his mom. I kind of like that.
Either way, you decide. This goes to the, you know, those that have the psychologist with them and, you know, the lame question, do you think of yourself as a cat or a dog? I still don't know what the right answer is to that. whatever you decide as an organization, whatever it is you're looking for with that type of question. How many times do you hear from the lawyers? Never ask a question you don't already know the answer to. You know, if you're going to ask a question like that, you obviously are looking for some type of response, whether it be, is he going to be honest about it? Is he going to burr up on it? What's he going to do? You know, if you have a purpose for it, as lame as it may seem to the outsider, then okay, you're going to find out one way or the other. But I can't help but agree that, and I'm sure Jeff Ireland regrets asking it in that setting, although I'll say one more time, you know, that's as probably as private a setting in as cloistered an area as you're going to get. It's not like, you know, in fairness, they're not the ones that brought it out public, you know, and made an issue of it now on a much more public forum. I kind of question that, quite frankly.
You're right. Des Bryant is the one who made it public,
yes,
by telling Michael Silver at Yahoo, and that's what created all of this publicity. Mike and Brian Billick, you know, you were on right before the draft, and I thought you had such an interesting point when you said, you know, you're a coach, and you're going to make a high first-round pick, and you got to go tell your owner, I believe in this guy, and you're going to have to give him $40 million guaranteed dollars or whatever the number is, and about 50% of the time it doesn't work out. So with that as the context, I heard a lot of people say yesterday, if you're going to give someone that much money, you have a right to ask them anything you want. Do you think that's true?
You know, in a purist sense, in a business moral or ethical sense, maybe you don't. And there are a lot of people, obviously, that deal in a world where there are legal ramifications in terms of the questions that you can ask. But in that context, it's like the NFL itself. The commissioner has made it very real. How many times do we talk on this show about a player that has not been charged with anything or not been convicted of anything, but then the league has made it very clear they're holding them to a different set of rules when you come into this league? So even the interview process, you're right. If I'm going to give you, and I'm going to go to the business side here, if I'm going to give you $30 million, that allows me a little latitude to ask some questions and to see, you know, like I can said earlier, if I can peer into your soul a little bit. And you're not going to do it in a 15-minute conversation at the combine. That's not going to happen. But it's one of many conversations that you have. And don't you think that Arthur Blank and the Atlanta Falcons would have loved to have been a little more probing, possibly, with their questions of Michael Vick when they brought him out to recognize that there were issues that Michael was dealing with?
I heard a lot of people bring that up yesterday. It's an excellent analogy. Brian, we always appreciate it. Thanks for jumping in.
Glad to do it.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
Dan Levitard from 790 The Ticket down in Miami, the Miami Herald. You see him all over ESPN with perspective on all stories South Florida and beyond. And right now there are two huge stories in Miami, the pending free agency of Dwayne Wade and the controversy with the Miami Dolphins front office. So we'll get perspective on both of those. How you been, Dan?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Long time no talk. All right, let's start with Wade, and then we'll work our way to the story that so many people have been talking about for the last 36 hours. Golic's been asking the question of everybody, what does Dwayne Wade, it's clear he wants to stay in Miami, but he needs to see stuff that makes him happy. What does he need to see in order to stay in Miami for the foreseeable future?
I haven't heard yet a good argument for why it is that he would leave if there's more money here and they've got room for him, another max player, and another $10 million player. I mean, NBA executives will tell you that Miami runs free agency, and you only need three great players in this league. I mean, it was two a while ago, but three great players in this league will make you a champion for a while. So if he could get, you know, Bosch and Joe Johnson, or, you know, if he could convince some of these guys to come down here, and why, you know, it's not going to be very hard to convince guys to come down here if you've got money and South Florida. I have yet to hear the good argument for why it is he would leave.
Well, I mean, I guess that is the argument then, Dan, is what makes everybody think that those guys would just come down there? I guess that's the thing. He needs two people to add to it where, say, if he were to go to, like, Chicago, where you have a Derrick Rose and a Joakim Noah who's been playing really well, you're adding him to a team that's already pretty good, where now in Miami you're banking on a couple of max guys coming down to Miami.
Okay, but if you're not willing to extend, and I understand that he'd be able to convince guys to come down here, then the idea is that you would be able to convince him to go elsewhere. So, like, Bosch hasn't won anything. He's frustrated. Nobody knows how great Bosch is because he hasn't been able to play with anybody. Wade has already done it here. That's the credit that he's got. That's the benefit of the doubt he's got. He's shown that he's a championship player. So, he is more valuable to Bosch and to Stoudemire than Derrick Rose is to him. So, that's the logic. Anyway, that's the way that, and there's more money down here than there is in Chicago, which is, just follow the money. That's usually where guys end up.
Yeah, it's tough to picture him leaving. I agree with you completely. All right, and then there's the story that certainly we talked about all day yesterday, and so it seems that everyone else. I know you had Mike Ditka on your show yesterday. We read the comments. It made us laugh. I want your perspective, and then I want the local perspective in general, how you feel the Miami community has reacted to this, if indeed those are different. For those who don't know, Jeff Ireland, the general manager of the Dolphins, acknowledges that he asked Dez Bryant, when he was interviewing him before the draft, asked Dez Bryant if his mother was a prostitute. Dez Bryant has had a troubled past. There are a lot of questions about him in an off-the-field capacity. Dez Bryant clearly was offended by this and told Yahoo Sports that story came out. Ireland issued an apology, or at least issued a statement in which he said he had apologized to Dez Bryant. So for those who didn't know the story, that's the story. Dan, what is your reaction to it, and how would you describe the reaction of Dolphin fans in general?
I haven't heard a lot of people who can defend this. One of the things that gets me called a contrarian and an apologist is that I like to try and look at the other side and extend compassion and empathy and explanations, not necessarily excuses, but explanations. It's hard to explain why you would ask this kid that question. Now, the media does a very poor job of reporting context and perspective, so maybe there's something there, but the Dolphins are so private, and Dolphins management is so bad about getting out in front of cameras and explaining things, that in the absence of them telling you how this could possibly happen, you're left to wonder, how the hell could this possibly happen? And, I haven't heard anybody who can defend it well, and then in South Florida, like, rarely do you have in sports consensus opinion on something, but this is pretty close to consensus. You don't ask somebody this question in a job interview, and more to the point, and I'm not cynical at all, more to the point, you have to wonder, when the apology is extended only after it becomes public, not when it happened, not after you did it, but only you're reacting to the reaction. It's not the action that you're apologizing for, it's the reaction. And when the owner comes out and now says he's going to investigate it, I have to wonder if these guys aren't motivated by the fact that people are going to look at this and say, this is borderline illegal. You can't do this to a job interviewer. Like, this is against the law to do this. So when the apology comes this late after the reaction, and when the owner is now saying investigating it, you have to wonder the sincerity of how sorry they are for doing it, and or if they're just realizing that what they did was wrong because everybody's yelling about it.
And again, Jeff Ireland said in his apology that he used poor judgment in a question. He didn't put it in context at all of how he asked it, so we're just left to think feel about it, what Dez Bryant said, that he was asked if his mother was a prostitute. Do you think that Stephen Ross will throw out some discipline at Jeff Ireland?
Well, I think he's being forced to here. I think this is the first time he's had to deal with anything as the new owner of the Dolphins that resembles a controversy. And the fact that he came out with a statement saying, look, we abide by, employment guidelines and try and, when recruiting, we apply. I just feel like he's being forced to by the idea that there are a lot of lawyers circling around this saying, this is not only wrong, what you might have done is it might be against the law what you did, and so they're being forced to keep looking at it to find out new information. Yeah, I think in this new Goodell era of punishing excessively anything that stains the brand, we've been 36 hours discussing this, and it stains the brand. So I imagine that something here is going to happen beyond. The national shame in the NFL, national shame is no longer enough. In a lot of instances, I think that is enough, that it's painful enough. Like, I can't imagine how this feels for Jeff Ireland right now. It is nationally embarrassing, and none of us want to be a national embarrassment. So I usually think the shame is enough, and I think in this instance the shame is enough, but image-conscious people rarely think that shame is enough.
Great stuff, Dan. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Dan.
See you, guys.
Take care. Dan Le Batard, very good perspective.
Yep.
ESPN.com senior NBA writer Mark Stein. And Mark, you know, you take a look at the way Brandon Jennings has played all season long. We know that Tyreke Evans is going to be voted Rookie of the Year. Stephen Curry had a huge year for Golden State. Can you remember a time where we had this many impact rookies coming into the draft having these big seasons like we had these three guys?
Well, what I can tell you is, you know, after turning in my ballot, I hated not voting for Jennings. It was hard to choose between the three of them. It was a mess, honestly. And Jennings really got hurt because, you know, he only shot 37% from the floor. And when you have a shooting percentage that's that low, you're probably not going to win a major honor. And he had that huge game at the beginning of the season when he erupted for 55 and kind of set a standard that he really couldn't live up to again, because we expected that kind of offensive explosion. Maybe not 55, but we certainly expected frequent offensive explosions from this guy. But he probably didn't get enough credit for being the point guard for a team that made the playoffs and really overachieved. And you know, he was one of the few constants for that group. You know, that lost Michael Redd early. They lost Andrew Bogut late. And so I'm happy for him that, you know, he was beaten up for going to Europe and everybody second-guessed that decision because he didn't set Europe on fire. But really the path he's taken and what we're seeing now, you know, he's really hushing a lot of critics. And the Bucks are really becoming kind of the great untold story here of the playoffs. I mean, they're going to get some attention now, and it's probably overdue, because for them to be doing this without Bogut is just stunning when Atlanta is known as a pretty physical team that can knock bodies around, and you would think without having Bogut they wouldn't have a chance in this series, and now they have a chance to finish it off.
All right, Mark, from an untold story to a story that's going to be told many times between now and Saturday. All the replays we're going to see of LeBron James shooting that free throw left-handed. He doesn't know what's wrong with his right elbow. It goes numb. It hurts immensely. X-rays, MRIs, no one knows what's wrong with it. How do you see this affecting the rest of the playoffs, beginning with this series against the Boston Celtics?
Well, having this little rest should help. But, I mean, I think the thing that surprised people is when LeBron said this has been bothering him for quite a long time. Now, if LeBron was 100%, I really think that the Cavs would be able to mow through Boston pretty quickly. Even though Boston looked good against Miami, the Heat are really a shell of a team right now. Cleveland has the ability to go small and really move, you know, switch the ball quickly, get the Boston players moving, you know, playing at a pace that would bother the Celtics. And you know, I think if we were seeing a full strength LeBron, I really think the Cavs would have an opportunity to win this in five. But you factor in the uncertainty about LeBron and the fact that Boston is a really proud team, their veteran guys can probably drag this thing to at least six. I'm still liking Cleveland's chances, but you know, we're just going to have to see as far as long term. We're going to be really scrutinizing LeBron from here, and there's no question that this could be a major, major factor in the playoffs.
ESPN.com senior NBA writer Mark Stein is with us. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. And Mark, I know a series you've been following really closely, Mavericks and the Spurs. Dallas just picked a bad time for a shooting slump, games 2, 3, and 4, but they seem to right their ship enough, blowing out the Spurs a night ago. Where do you see the series going from here?
The issue is really going to be, can, you know, Dallas probably got more stops and had more opportunities to run in game five than they had in the previous four games combined, certainly the previous three games combined. They came out at home with a lot of defensive activity, a lot of deflections, a lot of stops. They were able to run. And against San Antonio, that's really the way they have to play. That's going to be that's the way they have to win. They have to play at a faster pace. If this is a slow down, knockout kind of game, especially in San Antonio, that greatly favors the Spurs. So that's going to be the question in game six on the Spurs floor. Are the Mavs going to be able to get out in transition enough to win? And they were not able to do that in the first two games. I mean, this was pretty deflating for the Mavs to hold San Antonio to 94 and 92. Those are pretty reasonable totals defensively. The Mavs would like to think they could have won one of those games, especially when Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker only go for 31 as a trio in game four. So that's really what you need to watch for. Tempo is going to dictate game six.
Must win for the Spurs in game six to avoid a game seven?
The only reason I hesitate to say must win is because if you remember in 2006, the scenario played out where the Mavs got the 3-1 lead. San Antonio won game six in Dallas. Everybody thought this was going back to San Antonio, and there's no way the Mavs could win there. And they not only won game seven, they won it twice. They went up huge, got up 20. San Antonio came all the way back, and then the Mavs memorably won in overtime after Nowitzki was fouled by Ginobili on that drive and forced OT. So these teams are so closely matched and have such a history that honestly, no outcome between these teams would really ever surprise you. I mean, they're capable of anything. It's always great theater. You know, I think the next game or two, if it does go seven, it's going to be close, and it's going to be filled with a lot of drama. These teams just can't help it.
All right, Mark, let me get to a topic that's quickly taking over the postseason, and that's players and coaches complaining about officiating and those players and coaches getting fined. Phil Jackson fined for his comments about Kevin Durant a few days ago. He doesn't know why he was fined. And now we had Dwight Howard fined $35K for what he blogged about the officiating during the series against the Bobcats. Howard spent plenty of time on the bench. He says, I can't believe some of the fouls I was getting called for. David Stern has been pretty heavy-handed so far with his punishment when you criticize officiating. Has it been fair?
Well, honestly, ever since he came out early in the playoffs and said that the next step is suspensions, that's, I would say, the heavy-handed part, and everybody's kind of waiting to see who's going to be that first guy who actually gets suspended for criticizing the refs. We've seen so many 35K fines already that I've almost lost track. We probably need to put a list together so we can all quickly reference that every time somebody's name gets added to it. But that's really the question here: who's gonna get the first suspension? And the way these playoffs are going, it might happen this postseason.
Yeah, if I had to put my money on somebody, I'd put my money on Stan Van Gundy. He'd be the one guy I would think he'd be the first guy that would blow up.
Yeah, even if they get the Bucks and they have another lopsided series, he might still be the guy. You're right.
He's ESPN.com senior basketball writer Mark Stein, his latest on the front of the basketball page on ESPN.com. Mark, as always, appreciate your time with us on All Night. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, Jace.
He's got a new book, Straight Talk from the Wild Thing. He's a former All-Star. Major League Baseball Network's Mitch Williams. So, Mitch, when do you... I'm writing a book. I'm writing mine only when I'm in an airplane, because that's when I think. When did you write your book? Where were you?
I did it with my co-author all summer long while I was in my truck driving back and forth to MLB Network. It's an hour and a half drive each way, so I had plenty of time to sit down and dictate. And so I did it all from my vehicle last summer.
I'll tell you, those long road trips, a lot of things bang around the head, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting, as from a player's perspective, Major League Baseball today tweaked some of their All-Star game rules. Everybody's going to use a DH. They've added a player. One position player can come back into the game. I don't know if any of it matters. How do players see the All-Star game? Is it become more of a pain in the neck because the salaries are bigger and you don't need the exposure? How do players view it, do you think?
You know, hopefully they still view it the same way they did when I was playing, as an honor. When you get either number one voted in by the fans, or number two chosen by a manager, as I had to have done, obviously when you're a reliever, you can't get voted in. You have to be chosen by the manager of that team that year. And it's an honor to be either voted in or chosen to be on that team. You have to view it as an honor. And anyone who doesn't view it that way doesn't view the game the way they ought to.
You know, it's interesting. Your Phillies just signed Ryan Howard to a huge deal. Now, the Phillies have a good revenue stream, but it is a working-class city, and he signed a monster contract, and their payroll, if they sign Jason Worth, is going to be $1.06 million. My question is, have they handcuffed their future with Ryan Howard's deal?
No, I don't think so. I think the ownership in Philadelphia has finally figured out that when they spend the money, they're getting a return on their investment, because I think it's, what, I think 40-something sellouts in a row there in Philadelphia. And when you can sell a ballpark out and it's as popular as this team is, they're making money hand over fist in that city, the ownership group is. So they want to continue to keep putting a quality product on the field, and I think Ryan Howard, them signing him is huge, because now it eliminates that question. It eliminates it from Ryan's mind, the Philadelphia fans' mind, ownership, it's done. Now the big deal is going to be the Jason Worth signing. They're going to have to get this guy signed, because I don't think you can look at Dominic Brown and bring him up and say, okay, he's going to replace Jason Worth. Number one, he's left-handed. He's going to be a rookie. You cannot take that and count on Dominic Brown to produce as a rookie, being left-handed in a very left-handed lineup as it is. So they've got to get Jason Worth done.
Do you make anything of the Mets' hot start? I mean, we're only 20 games into a season. The Yankees were only 10-10 last year. As a former player, at what point do you look at the standings and think, okay, I can say some definitive things here?
I think around the All-Star break. I mean, obviously you start to get a feel for what you've got as a team in April. I mean, the old saying goes, you can't win a championship in April, but you can lose one. So you want to get off to a start, obviously, where you feel confident in what you're putting on the field every day and the teammates that you've got there with you. But the not panic rule should always come into play. And you look at some of these teams that have started slowly, you know they're going to play better than they played. And there's teams that have started fast that you know are not going to finish that way. They just don't have the depth or the talent in some of the other clubs. You look at San Diego. San Diego's leading the division. Are they going to end up there? My guess would be no, they're not going to end up there. But you have to just view it for what it is. You're 20-something games in, this is where you're at, and look at how you compare to where you thought you should be and where you truly are. So April is just kind of a measuring stick as to what you've got.
Dodger GM Ned Colletti ripped the Dodgers and ripped Matt Kemp specifically. As a player, how do you respond to your GM ripping you?
Number one, Ned Colletti is a friend of mine. I love Ned, and I will tell you right now what he did, he could not have been more wrong for doing. It is not his job as a general manager to come out and question whether or not Matt Kemp is not playing hard because he signed a big deal and just signed a 2-year contract. That, for me, now you're starting to question the player's integrity, and that's going to do nothing but sour that player on Ned Colletti. And that's a bad road to go down. It really is. I think you've got one of the all-time great managers managing that club. If there was a problem with Kemp's work ethic, I think Joe Torre would have addressed it already.
Mitch Williams from the Major League Baseball Network, his book, Straight Talk from the Wild Thing. Mitch, always a pleasure. Love your insights.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You bet.
But you may have heard that they made some All-Star games. This committee that baseball put together to sort of take a look at the situation and make whatever suggestions they want, a committee from which I was inexplicably omitted, has come back with suggestions for improvements to the All-Star game.
I'm
and
not even sure.
They are effective immediately taking place. So here are some of the changes. In my opinion, these are all fine. They didn't go nearly far enough.
All right.
First, the designated hitter will now be utilized by both teams, regardless of whether the All-Star game is played in the AL or NL ballpark. Mike, I think that's certainly fine. Tony Terzi sent me a note and said, do you think this will lead to the beginning of the elimination of the designated hitter, maybe getting the National League, getting some sort of equanimity in the situation? Maybe the players' union will say, you know what, it's enough already with this. Let's get all these highly paid designated hitters jobs in the National League as well.
Oh, you mean Wait, you say get rid of the DH or add the DH everywhere?
Excuse me. Yeah, I meant to get rid of the separation of leagues and add the DH everywhere.
I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I think more people like what's going on in the National League.
What this does, of course, for the All-Star game is it removes the need for managers to pinch hit for the pitcher.
Well, plus, to get a pitcher up there in an All-Star game, people want to see action. You ain't getting a whole lot when a pitcher's up in the box.
And they very rarely bat in the All-Star game anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But
right,
you remove that.
Right.
So not a big deal. Another change. Rosters expanded from 33 to 34 players, consisting of 21 position players and 13 pitchers. I'm against this. I would go the other way. Reduce the roster. Load it up with pitchers. You want to put 15 pitchers on the roster, that's fine by me. Let the starter go two innings. Let everyone else pitch one inning. I don't want my team's pitchers pitching a long way in the All-Star game, and I know you don't want yours. But as far as the rest of the guys, let them play a baseball game. Put the best players in the league on the field and let them play, if not all of, at least the overwhelming majority of the All-Star game. Why in the world are the biggest stars in the sport getting one at-bat, maybe two max, and calling it a night? What will make the All-Star game exciting for me is if in the ninth inning, Mariano Rivera is facing Albert Pujols with the game on the line. Not Mariano Rivera is facing the mandatory All-Star from this team with the game on the line, which is why I would then go forward and say, we have got to do away with every team being represented.
Well, I mean, I think it's what's on the game. Right now, there is something on the game. There's a carrot at the end of the game.
Right.
There's home field. So I would agree. I would play it more like a game. I would absolutely agree with that. Until the rule gets changed back to what it should be and there's nothing on the game, then I would have, you know, everybody playing every couple of innings, get everybody out there, everybody tip their cap, let the fans vote everybody in. But if you're going to make it a game, right now they're trying to do both. They're trying to say, there's something on this game, but it's an exhibition for the fans. If there's something on the game, make the game worthwhile.
Right.
I don't want some guy batting in the ninth inning who is only there because his team has to have representation as the key batter on where home field is going to be for the World Series. And quite honestly, how many people is home field advantage in the World Series going to affect in that All-Star game?
Well, whoever it affects, it affects. I mean, you know, well, whichever teams at that point in the season are having good years, it might affect them.
And it may come down to some guy from Kansas City or Pittsburgh or whoever.
I mean,
so many teams.
So do away with it.
I've been yelling that for years. I've thrown up my hand a couple years ago on that. Though.
Buster Olney's on the phone. He thinks I'm out of my mind. Go ahead, Buster.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Here's the basic question for you guys. Is Roy Halladay, who's regarded as the best pitcher in baseball, going to basically pitch six, seven innings?
No. He said pitchers only go two innings and
pitchers,
then one.
I get it with the pitcher. Why is that?
Wait, you're trying to win the game. Why wouldn't you want the best pitcher in baseball pitching as far as he can? Tell me, Greeny, why?
Because there's no question that will have an impact on his team's ability when the regular season resumes 2 days later. The other position players, it does not. No one can convince me that a guy playing nine innings in an All-Star game is going to affect him on Thursday. These guys are accustomed to playing every day. It's a baseball game. You're standing in center field. You can play the nine innings of the game. The pitchers, I get it. They have only a certain number of pitches in their arm every single year, and you don't want to add any unnecessarily in the All-Star game. I understand it can't be as important as a regular season game, but we can make it more important than it is now, can't we?
No. Granny, it's either an exhibition or it's not. And if Roy Halladay isn't going to pitch six, seven innings, it's because it's an exhibition. So once you get past that point of determining what this is, have fun with it.
But how about, listen to me, listen.
I agree.
Leave Buster up. Here's the thing for both of you guys, okay? Isn't the most exciting thing, if we want to make it exciting for the fans, don't you want to see Albert Pujols or Alex Rodriguez or one of the biggest stars and best players in the game at the end when the game might be decided? I mean, isn't that the most exciting thing you could ask for instead of having them already been taken out of the game in the fourth inning so it's being decided by someone else in the ninth inning? Pujols against Rivera in the ninth is going to be outstanding in the All-Star game, no?
I totally agree with you, and is it ever going to happen? No! Because
why?
It's an exhibition, and everyone's treating it like that, except for you.
Well, no, the commissioner's not treating it like that. He made home field advantage in the World Series depend upon the outcome of the All-Star game.
But it's still treated like an exhibition because the fans are the ones voting everybody in, so it's a popularity contest. Again, they're trying to serve two masters.
We may have to change that then. I mean, if we lose the fan vote, then we lose the fan vote. Or if at least you can give the managers a 50% vote say in it or whatever it is and get the right players in there. Buster, nothing I'm saying makes sense to you?
No.
Okay.
It's either an exhibition or it's not. And, Greeny, I would say this. You know, if you're not going to be on that crack committee, I want to hear your pregame speech to the players. I'd love to see the reaction.
All right, fair enough. Thank you. I would like to be on the committee.
See,
I really would.
I'm with you. That's what it boils down to. It's either an exhibition or it is not. So go one way or the other. Make the decision. But right now you're playing both sides.
I don't think it's impossible to do both. You can do a little more than they're doing on the important side. The way it's currently constituted, the commissioner takes a pounding on the home field being dependent upon it because everything else about it makes it an exhibition game. But we can, even understanding that it is an exhibition game, we can do a few very simple things that will make it feel more like a real game. It will actually make it more like a real game. And there's no reason not to.
And can I also add in there that since we've gone this way, only one time has a rating been higher than when the home field wasn't on it. All the other times it's been lower than when home field wasn't on it. So to say it's been better, you know, and it's attracted more people, not true.
Well, if you have Albert Pujols facing Mariano Rivera in the ninth inning with the game on the line, people will watch.
That's a different talk we're having. If you have Mariano Rivera against Albert Pujols, it doesn't matter if there's home field on the line or not.
No,
people are going to tune in.
I hear you.
So,
but we're not talking about that now because that's already happened. This is not a referendum on whether home field advantage in the World Series is a good idea or a bad.
Wait a minute, you're talking about changing things. Why can't I talk about them changing it back to the way it was?
Nah, because you're.
I can't talk about changing, but you can.
Yes, correct. Uh-oh. You have now summed up the situation.
Figure that out.
Joining us now, though, Tiger's return 3 weeks ago at the Masters. He's playing at Quail Hollow. It's finished up, and Tom Rinaldi joins the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. What's up, man? How are you?
Ryan, how are you?
Good. I almost made it sound like I was inviting Tiger Woods onto the show, so I hope I didn't let anybody down.
I think that would be a vast and considerable letdown. I mean, the chasm there is difficult to measure.
But I feel like your answers will be a little bit more honest. So let's go with you.
Go ahead.
3 weeks ago, you know, he's back, and he plays plus two today, so actually not a great round, his worst round since his final round of the 2009 PGA Championship. But what was the return like for him in comparison to what it was like at Augusta?
I think that's a very good question, and I think, obviously, he always says that he's nervous that every time he hits a tee shot and begins a tournament. But let's face it, Ryan, it was such a different circumstance. He does have that major championship, that return aspect out of the way. But in terms of his game, Ryan, while so much regarding the galleries returned to normal in their treatment of him, et cetera, his game was far from form. He really struggled today in a lot of ways. He likes to refer to a two-way miss, meaning he's missing both left and right, which makes diagnosing that and fixing it two very different things. And he had a horrific stretch around the turn, double bogey and bogey. He went off on 10. And 17, 18, and 1. I mean, that's as poorly as I've seen him hit it in a very long time.
What was the crowd like?
The crowd was robustly and universally supportive. There was not a single voice of dissent. There were people shouting encouragement to him, in particular after he hit poor shots. And the galleries, Ryan, are just vast. If you had dropped down from outer space, you went on a sabbatical for the last 6 months to Pluto, and you came back down and walked this golf course today, I would challenge you to see anything different.
Really? Tom Rinaldi joining us here, Scott Van Pelt Show with Ryan Russillo on ESPN Radio, ESPNradio.com. Has the Tiger, I don't want to say the Tiger factor has died down at all, but the constant questioning of the other players, has that died down a bit from what we had at Augusta, where I feel like as soon as a guy got off 18, he was immediately asked a question about Tiger?
Yes. I mean, Jeff Ogilvie, I spoke to Jeff Ogilvie, as did a number of other reporters, and nobody asked him about Tiger Woods. Jeff Ogilvie was 4 under par at the time. He's, you know, currently T2 right now. And I do think that portion of what's happened has passed, and obviously not a moment too soon for his playing peers. They're more than tired of it.
Do we feel like this is now gradualism as far as the anticipation we have for Tiger playing week to week? The more he plays, the more he's out there, the less concern we'll be with it? Or do you feel like there's still a circus-level spike somewhere in the future?
There always can be, Ryan, and I think because there are, you know, agent provocateurs in America, and he knows that, and so do you. That there are going to be people who are going to perhaps try to get in his face, get in his way, get in his path to do nothing more than be provocative. And, I mean, I would be stunned if you ever saw a discernible or overt reaction from Woods, whether you judge that to be genuine or not. Mm-hmm. The guy has mastered the 1,000-yard stare in the 10-foot room. He's not going to give you anything, and unless somebody physically gets to him, and I don't foresee that happening either.
Tom, good stuff, man. Thanks, and enjoy the weekend, all right?
Bismarcky. Thank you.
Tom Rinaldi. Hanging out with us. He, of course, for most everyone who doesn't get that reference, asked me a question last time he came on about the historical impact on the Western Hemisphere of Bismarcky, and I wasn't able to answer that fully, so I just gave that one a pass.